Hello everyone and welcome to Backchat. I'm Natasha, the podcast's editor. In today's bonus episode, I sat down with Carl Miller, the author of The Death of the Gods, a book which explores new forms of power in today's digital world.
Here now with more news, debate and opinion.
Hi Carl, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Hi Natasha, thanks for having me.
So in your book, The Death of Gods, you wrote that power today can easily come in the form of a vacuum cleaner as well as a knife. Can you explain this statement?
Yeah, it came from a specific incident where I was in the flat of this technologist somewhere in North London, and he was trying to teach me a lesson about power, I think, and in doing so was holding a kind of the flat of a knife to my throat and was asking me to do the same to him. I think was trying to teach me that power means having someone else's life in your hands, and more broadly, the ability to kind of reach into the lives of those around us. And just at that moment, just as when I was thinking, what on earth have I got myself into? His phone started beeping, and his highly technological vacuum cleaner that uses LiDAR to kind of direct itself around his flat. I'd somehow managed to get out of the front door of his flat and get lost and was phoning for help. And I thought that kind of vignette in some way kind of reflected what I would then go on to learn about power, which is that there are certain kinds of power, which are like the knife, ones which are very obvious, which we all know about. But it was also kind of coming in all these strange new forms. It was power itself was becoming more mysterious, a bit more like the vacuum cleaner, really. Either kind of sitting in areas with which most of us are unfamiliar, or actually being of a nature which most of us were unfamiliar with, or being wielded by groups of unfamiliar people. So that's why the kind of obvious forms of power, and be they kind of brute, kind of coercive, forceful kinds of power like the knife, are now kind of rubbing shoulders with all these strange new forms of power like the vacuum cleaner.
So it's basically the vacuum cleaner represents, as you say, this new form of power that we don't recognise or maybe don't quite understand.
Yeah, exactly. The vacuum cleaner represents mysterious new forms of digital power.
Now every time I look at a vacuum cleaner, it will not quite be the same. And one thing you grapple with in the book is how can we define power and who has the most power?
Yeah, it's a very important, useful idea, power, but it's also a very, very hard one to kind of specifically put your finger on, because it does sometimes feel like it's everywhere. And each kind of major writer that I looked at that has tried to deal with power have each brought their own definition to it. It meant a very different thing for Marx than it did for Foucault, and a very different thing for Machiavelli than for Hobbes. So whilst power is very useful, very, very frequently it's kind of contested in its actual definition. I kind of decided that I would go out and try and just see what power looks like rather than kind of start with a hard and fast definition. So the kind of very broad idea that I had was actually, to use, and here's another metaphor, was like the kind of small gods of kind of Greek or Roman myth, which is why the book was called The Death of the Gods. You know, these are like the kind of gods that kind of intervene in our lives in various kinds of bigger and smaller ways. You know, they might make you stronger or faster or cause you to trip up at a crucial moment, but they kind of always reach in and change what your life is like. And that's exactly what I thought power really is, the capacity to do. It's to the ability to reach into the lives of others, to shape what those lives are, and to change fundamentally the choices that each of us makes, or even the choices that we have. That's what I thought power was. As to who is the most powerful, that's hard to answer. I mean, I found there to be essentially almost like a changing of the guard. So lots of things and lots of organisations and processes and people that we think are powerful, I found to be less so than we thought. And typically they were everyone from political parties, parliaments, the mainstream press, even states. And then this kind of new cast of actor was increasingly, I thought, stepping into centre stage. And, you know, they could be the hacker, which I think are rising to become a new power elite. They could be the cyber criminal that I think are that I think is causing the kind of worst crisis of law enforcement in the history of modern policing, citizen journalists, digital Democrats, lots of new different kinds of player, both for good and bad, are finding power in radically different ways than people have before.
And as you said in your book, you interviewed the newly powerful and the newly powerless, ranging from former presidents to hackers. So are you suggesting that it is these newly powerful which might begin to dominate over the old powers?
Yeah, exactly. I think they already are. I think we often don't realise it. I think cyber criminals already are dominating law enforcement agencies. I think they are committing kind of entirely new forms of crime and entirely new places online, in forms which police forces are completely struggling to do anything about. I think that technologists increasingly are kind of stepping away from political discussions or trying to change the world through the law courts or through public debate. They're just simply building new forms of technology which make some things possible or not possible, make some things easier or less easy, and in doing so almost like kind of just answering the question before it's even asked. Already I think hackers are a new parolee. I don't think they're rising to become one. They already can change the world according to their own image. They have powers online which mortals like you or I, Natasha, like really struggle, I think, to often understand. The change of the guard has kind of happened, but it's often done so in the shadows. It's done so in kind of ways which aren't broadly recognised yet. And that was kind of one of the enduring kind of themes of the book, really, is that I find it a kind of an irony of sorts that we live in a world obviously more awash with information than ever before, but also a world where I think our lives are being shaped in ways which are actually more and more and more mysterious to us all.
And you spoke to a lot of very interesting people in the book. Who was the most fascinating person that you spoke to?
I think it would have to be Chris. Chris arrived towards the end of the book. He's an ethical hacker and a darknet investigator. And he spends his time after work with six computer screens in front of him, plunging into some of the deepest, darkest, scariest parts of the internet in order to try and understand them. And I kind of follow Chris on one of his travels into the heart of a online assassination market.
Wow.
Chris, I think, is a kind of Batman figure, really. You know, he's by day a very normal kind of person, but by kind of after work, kind of much like his fellow hackers, kind of is imbued with all these new kind of capabilities and was kind of plunging himself into the Startnet market in order to try and learn more about it and try to save some people from it. It's probably the story that I found the most difficult to write about, definitely the one that I found the scariest to in some sense be part of. But I thought that Chris was a kind of, amongst all the many fascinating people that I met, I think Chris was kind of in his kind of acceptance and willingness, really, to kind of endure this personal risk in an arena that most people haven't even heard about. I thought that what he kind of stood out for me.
I mean, it's interesting because we talk about these Batman figure, and that is a positive consequence of this world of technology and social media that, as you say, a lot of us don't really understand. But obviously there are many negative consequences of these developments. A few weeks ago on the podcast, I spoke to the Australian journalist Peter Grester, who talked about how social media is damaging independent journalism, which you talk about in your book. And at the moment, I'm studying in Paris, and the Gilets Jaunes movement, which obviously sprung up through Facebook, is posing a huge challenge to Macron's presidency. So, I mean, this is a big question. But overall, would you say technology and social media has made the world better or worse?
That was exactly the kind of essay question I was set when I set out to write the book. My editor asked me, you know, are we moving in what you're seeing happening to power, are we moving towards a world of more liberation or more control? And to be honest, I found that question impossible to answer, because almost everywhere I looked, there seemed to be this kind of onset of both more liberation and more control than ever before. There seem to be both more bad stuff and more good stuff. All these people who were finding all these amazing new opportunities to do good and to help people, And then also people that had found in the digital world new routes towards kind of abuse and potent forms of control. So I think that is actually the nature of the digital revolution, is this onset of both at exactly the same moment. I don't think we can say that social media is making it better or worse. I think it's making it better and worse at exactly the same moment in time. I think that is actually the very heart of what we're currently living through.
And for example, taking a look at the Gilets Jaunes, how can democratic governments overcome these challenges to their power posed by social media, or can they not?
Well, I think the Gilets Jaunes, much like Occupy, much like Gezi Park or even Tahrir Square, are all examples of new forms of protest which are being kind of made much easier, much cheaper, much more spontaneous than ever before because of, at least in part, digital technology. I think like there's a big challenge here for liberal democracies around the world to work out how they can use the digital world to actually become more responsive to their own citizens themselves. You know, our expectations are changing, our daily lives are changing in almost every area other than the way in which we are governed. And to me, it's astounding that democracy really hasn't changed at all yet during the digital revolution. I think a future challenge for democracies is not only to learn how to use kind of digital technology better to kind of electioneer and to reach voters during elections and to win votes, but actually then how to wield political power better themselves. And the kind of story that I use there is from Taiwan and the digital Democrats around Audrey Tang, a high school dropout and Silicon Valley entrepreneur and civic hacker who becomes the digital minister of Taiwan after the 2016 Sunflower Revolution there, and then begins to reform the way in which Taiwan makes democratic decisions. She establishes a protest called V Taiwan, which was an attempt, it's a live attempt to use the online world as a way of involving many, many more people in democratic decision making.
It's all very Black Mirror, I have to say.
Yeah, it is. I mean, sometimes you feel that Black Mirror is people are actually taking notes as practical ideas of what to try next.
That's scary. And in your book, you also ask whether we, quote, normal people, are more powerful than before, or if we are more controlled. Did you find an answer to this?
I found, like, genuinely across the world, like, very normal people, in fact, usually being the people that are making these tremendous changes. Like Audrey Tang or Elliot Higgins, who is the kind of hero of my media chapter, the founder of Bellingcat, that jumped from the kind of comment pages of The Guardian to the front page of The New York Times, or Chris. These are normal people. They have technical nous, sure. They're kind of driven. They saw an opportunity and they went for it. But they're not people that were born into privilege or people that kind of, you know, assumed a position of power that they felt simply entitled to. They were people that found at their fingertips all these amazing new opportunities and then took those opportunities. And those opportunities are pretty much at each of our fingertips. So there are amazing things that each of us can do now thanks to the digital world that we couldn't have dreamed of doing 15 or 20 years ago. But then there are all these new dangers. I think cybercrime probably stands out for me as being one where it's most concerning of all, kind of, and kind of profoundly unsettling the way in which states and police forces have not got on top of it. So that's the world I think we live in now. It's a scarier world. It's a world where there are more dangers, I think, than there were before. It's a world where, you know, states and cyber criminals and manipulation merchants and viral advertisers are all developing ever better ways of getting your attention and using that to change the way in which you behave. But it's also one where there are genuinely so many routes to so many different amazing lives that we didn't have. And, you know, and we're living through the kind of so-called tech lash at the moment. So, you know, from the kind of utopian noughties, there's now this idea that, you know, writers and journalists and thinkers on these topics are now so negative about the impact of social media, so critical of kind of digital life. And I don't really regard myself to be part of that at all. I mean, I think it is very, very important to try and keep our view on what is happening as balanced as possible. I think a lot of the kind of discussions around Facebook destroying democracy or Twitter being the kind of vehicle for Russian disinformation are really ignoring the amazing ways in which those platforms and more broadly the internet are changing lives every day. But for every terrible, worrying story that's emerging that somehow is tied to the internet, there are stories of genuine stories of liberation and genuine stories of people's lives changing for the better.
And if it wasn't for technology, we wouldn't be doing this interview right now. So,
right, just another check in on social media improving the world.
Bearing all this in mind, do you feel optimistic for the future, or is it gonna all be very Black Mirror?
I am optimistic. I'm very optimistic, actually. I do think we have a big task ahead of us. Power, going back to power, it's something that we've always tried to kind of control. So we always, as a kind of organized society, want to put rules around it to kind of govern how each of us can reach into everyone else's life. You know, I might think that you should be a vegan. I can't hold a gun to your head and make you a vegan. There's all different ways in which power should be used and shouldn't be. Kind of everywhere I looked, and the book ranges across politics and media and warfare and crime and so on, whether it was for good or for bad, and power looked like it was kind of breaking out of those cages. It felt like it was much less rule-bound than it was before. Like it felt like it was kind of happening and people were kind of using it to change the world, like regardless of professional standards or the law or norms or even public scrutiny and understanding. And I do think we have, in order to actually build a digital world we all want to live in, I do think we have a big task ahead of us in order to kind of refresh the rules of life for the digital age. I think we probably need to rejuvenate and replenish the entire kind of moral and institutional architecture that we have that governs power, because it just doesn't feel like the rules are biting enough anymore. And that's a really big challenge, and that is a big if then. But if we can do that, then yeah, I think that I think that the world is going to be fuller of opportunity than it will be of dangers.
It's really nice that you're optimistic about it, because as you say, you know, often in the media there is a lot of scaremongering about technology and the future, and you know, it's nearly Christmas. We need some positivity.
Here now with more news, debate, and opinion.
Thanks for listening, guys. Backchat will be back in the new year for more political discussions and special guests. Until then, Merry Christmas.